Welcome to the Briefing Room, a Healthcare Communications Association initiative brought to you by the Foresight Committee. I'm Rhiannon Meaden, Global Head of Complete Health Vision, a McCann Health Medical Communications company, and I'm co-leading the Briefing Room series with Joe Spadaccino, who's co-founder of Stirred Health and my colleague on the Foresight Committee. The HCA Foresight Committee explores topics that have relevance not just for today, but also help us as a profession prepare for tomorrow. In our Briefing Room series, we're talking to prominent senior business leaders at the forefront of change in a variety of roles in the pharmaceutical sector to help us build a timely picture of what the future key areas of focus are and what the future asks will be for us as healthcare communicators. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Catherine Scobie from Pfizer. Catherine, can you please introduce yourself and just tell us a little bit about your role?
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. And I look forward to our discussion today. So I currently co-lead the publications management team at Pfizer, and my remit is around innovative solutions and publications. I've been with Pfizer for 14 years, and our team currently is responsible for publications across the enterprise, and we sit within the Worldwide Medical and Safety Organization. So thank you for inviting me.
Brilliant. Thanks, Catherine, and thank you for joining us today. So my first questions are around pharma reputation and leadership. We're experiencing a time of really profound change as a result of the pandemic, personally, professionally, but also as a society more broadly. It would be great if you could tell us a little bit about how that's been experienced by your people in Pfizer.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, as you can imagine, there's been a lot going on at Pfizer over the course of the pandemic. It's been widely publicized in the news. But specifically, I mean, I think within our group and within, you know, Worldwide Medical and Safety, we've really been cognizant of the impact that the pandemic has had on our external partners, including the authors we work with, as most of them are HCPs and they're busy treating their patients, our external collaborators. And so really being mindful about having that balance of, you know, working with them and making sure that we're not being too, you know, brazen on with their time. I think the other thing is the awareness on the impact to our colleagues within our organization and their family life and the work-life balance around how we all have to juggle working from home and managing, you know, our caregiver roles at home. And then I think specifically related to publications, we've had to make some changes with our processes and how we handle certain publications because of the need for our the HCPs that we're working with to continue to manage their workload. And so we did some work with through ISMAP and helping them form some guidance around how to manage publications during COVID-19. So I think those were the biggest changes that we've observed and dealt with over the past year and a half.
It's really interesting. And I thinking about, I guess, from the reputational perspective, how do you think the pandemic has changed the public's perception of Pfizer and the industry in general, the pharma industry?
That's such a great question, and one I touched on at presented on at ISMAP's annual meeting this year as well. And I think speaking personally, I mean, I've been at Pfizer for 14 years. I have a great respect for my team, for the colleagues I work with at Pfizer, for the work that they do, the high standards that they set. And I have to say, I think that coming out of the woodwork, I've heard nothing but praise and high remarks from former grad school colleagues, from former, you know, colleagues that I worked with and other companies before Pfizer. And interestingly, I'm based at New York headquarters and I live in Manhattan. And strangers on the street, if I wear my Science Will Win mask, will stop me and thank Pfizer for the work that we've done. And I think that that's permeated across the industry. I mean, hopefully, I mean, I still think there are, obviously there are pockets where trust is still being worked on, but I do believe we've come a long way over this past year in improving the value of what our organizations do.
It's amazing recognition, isn't it, from people on the street. It's amazing.
Well, I think we also have inspiring leadership. I think our executive leadership team has done a tremendous job speaking out, and not just around COVID, but around all of the other other situations that have societal situations that have been raised over the past year around equity, diversity, mm-hmm. and inclusion. And I think all of that's come to a head, and our leadership team has really made a strong stand on making sure that we represent everyone, no matter where they come from.
It's so important, isn't it? And on a personal level then, so bringing it to a personal level, what's the most valuable lesson that you've learned through the course of this experience that we've been having globally?
Another great question. And I have to say, to me, and I hate to bring it back, but I think there is a lot of what happened during the pandemic that resonated and brought back the vibe after September 11th. And I was also here in New York at that time. And I have to say, seeing teams come together, either at the office or in your neighborhood, we had every night at 7 o'clock in, across the city, people cheering on healthcare workers. You could open your window and hear the roar of people just mm-hmm. cheering them on. And I think having people come together and really focusing on a common goal really just spoke to me and made me realize we can achieve some great things when we all work together. And so there's power in numbers, there's strength in numbers. And I think that that's probably the biggest lesson that I took out of this past year.
Yeah, I think that the themes of, you know, the power of leadership, the power of togetherness and what that can achieve are coming through really strongly in what you're saying. And I'm sure, you know, other people, it will really resonate for them as well. So thank you for sharing that.
Sure, absolutely.
I'm thinking sort of changing direction slightly and thinking about healthcare communications specifically and the value of healthcare communications. What does great healthcare communications look like to you? What does great mean?
Yeah, I think first and foremost is, and I think we all feel that, I think many of us feel this way, it's really about the reach, making sure we are reaching the right audiences. And I think one of the things that we've been working on at Pfizer this year is not just the reaching the right audience, but delivering the content in a format that is easy for them to understand and helps them to interpret what, you know, data we are presenting to them. I think by doing that, that's going to help us drive and change behaviors. And ultimately, I mean, my expectation is that will improve patient outcomes if we can deliver to the right audience, deliver the right message, and deliver it in a way that's digestible to them. That's the ultimate goal for all of us. And then I think the one thing, you know, carrying over the discussion about the pandemic is making sure that we really have the diversity, equity, and inclusion characteristics built into the work that we're doing.
And what does that look like? So how are you going about building those characteristics in? It's really interesting, and that theme of almost democratizing science, people having a right to understand science, it, again, a really powerful concept.
Yeah, I mean, I think broadly across our profession, there has been a great movement to engage patients into the work that we do to make things more understandable through plain language summaries. And those plain language summaries aren't just directed at patients. Mm. caregivers, maybe HCPs who want something in a toned down voice. But one of the activities we've held recently was an ad board with patient advocates to discuss publications. And we ensured that we covered a wide variety of therapeutic areas, and we ensured that the composition of that advisory board was diverse. Mm-hmm. And so not just in therapy areas, but also in gender and race and ethnicity. And they will continue to serve as an advisory panel for us in helping us shape our publications in the years to come. And so we're really excited about taking that head on and really trying to incorporate that into our work.
Great initiative and so important. Sounds like it's really leading the way there, which I guess segues somewhat into my next question, really, which is around what are your top goals, your top business goals, and what role will communications play in helping you achieve those goals?
Well, I mean, I would be remiss if I didn't start with open access publishing. And I think that is something we've been working on over the years. And every year we raise the bar. And so, you know, although Pfizer, we have decided we're not making it a mandatory policy because we really feel like we need to honor the academic freedom of having authors choose which journal they'd like to go to. We still would like to encourage everyone to publish in a journal that offers open access. And so this year, my breakthrough goal at my team's breakthrough goal is to try to achieve 95% open access publishing. And, you know, these goals are not meant to be, they aren't meant to be easy to achieve. And I think 95% will be difficult. But I think with working with our agency partners and having them help influence and shape the recommendations that we're giving to authors and sharing why it is important, because we can create all of this information and not having, you know, and no one being able to access it really kind of defeats mm-hmm. the purpose of this work. And so, and I think that ties into the plain language summaries too. And I think, you know, that's the second goal that we have, is really ensuring that we can have as many plain language summaries produced over the course of this year. And, you know, in order to have those that information available, we have to make it accessible. So those are really tied very strongly together. And so we're working really hard on that. And then I think for me personally, the other big goal I have for this year, which I've been working on now for a little bit longer than a year, is really building a best-in-class publication ecosystem. And so we've taken that on to build a publication management tool that is more than just a repository for publications, because we really think that there's a lot that we can learn from taking data from upstream sources, from integrations with other solutions, and then bringing in some analytics into our tool and using the data that we have within our solution to drive some insights. So it's a multi-year project, but you know, the bulk of that work is being done this year. Those are the three things that I have really on top of mind these days.
And it's and again, I think this sort of links into the next question. There's a big theme in there about accessibility of science and information. And what, in terms of the meaningful difference, what do you think the meaningful difference that healthcare communications should make is? How would you kind of characterize that? I guess it's the why behind a number of the different themes that you've been talking about.
Well, I think promoting inclusivity. And as you mentioned, you know, I discuss accessibility quite a bit. I think it all leads back to respect and trust. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's, as you know, healthcare communication professionals, that is the one thing that we can all fill that gap and help, you know, reduce the gap so that we can build trust, not just for our own independent organizations, but for us as healthcare professionals. So I think those are, you know, two attributes that are really important that are tied into all of this.
No, absolutely. And I guess then, in order to get there and to live and breathe that, looking to the future, what would you recommend that we stop, start, and continue as healthcare communicators?
Oh, wow. So I know this sounds a little trite, but really stop doing things the same old way if they're, you know, I just think that thinking about the future, and I love, as I mentioned to you earlier, I love the fact that you have a foresight committee. I think really thinking about the future, and you know, things may work, but maybe we could do them a little bit better. And really thinking about what are some pain points? How can we fix those pain points? How can we speed things up? I think one of our biggest challenges is how to do things faster. Mm-hmm. And really thinking about the steps in the process that take a long time. And as far as what we should continue doing, I think exploration, research, looking at what are some novel practices, how can we, you know, integrate them into what work we're doing. Some things may work, some things may not, but we should at least give them a try and see if there's some way that we can incorporate them. And I think the other thing that I try to do is see what other industries are doing and learning from them, and maybe that's something that we can apply to the work that we do. So,
yeah, interesting. Getting ideas from other sectors is always quite inspirational, isn't it? And as you say, if you don't try something, you don't know.
Right?
That bravery to do something differently, I think.
Yeah, it goes back to courage, right? Yeah. Exactly.
Being bold. And what do you think related to that? What will the future asks be for those of us that are responsible for healthcare communications?
You know, I've said this to so many people. I mean, I think that it's quite obvious as well. I mean, I think there's a huge focus on digital growth and transformation and how that can help us. And not just doing things faster, but doing things better and freeing up our time to do other things. I think particularly as we've seen in the news, real world evidence has really played a big role during the pandemic. And that takes a different form of analysis that if we had to do it, you know, the way we used to do it, it could take forever. And so using, you know, digital sources to help us analyze that information, we can get to probably some great conclusions much faster. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that we pay particular attention to is online dialogue through, you know, we've used Altmetric quite a bit to look at what are people saying about our publications and how can we use that to shape what other types of analyses we may need to do, what gaps we can fill by hearing what they're saying, and in a selective way, not just all of the chatter that's going on, but really looking at specific sources and trying to understand where they're saying we've either missed the mark or where we could do better or where there are gaps that need to be filled. So,
oh, interesting. So the ask being, I guess, being more digitally savvy, being more socially savvy, and then taking those learnings and integrating them into strategies is going to be a big theme for us in the future.
Yeah, I think you summarized that well. Exactly.
And it's constantly changing, isn't it? So
it is
trying to keep on top of a constantly moving situation. But that's exciting as well. I think that's a really exciting thing for us to
Right. And I was going to say, I mean, that's like the Congresses, right? So during the pandemic, we went virtually. And one of the things I asked my team was to take a look at what formats are they requesting? What are the size limitations? And I think because it was rather new, things are evolving even with Congresses. And so I don't think that it'll ever stay stagnant for too long in that space. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, my assumption is more Congresses will go hybrid and have that virtual element so that we can, back to accessibility, people who maybe who couldn't afford to travel there or for whatever reasons couldn't join in on that conversation face to face at a conference. I think that we're going to see more of that availability in the future.
Yeah, and it comes back to what you were talking earlier about fostering inclusion as well. You know, people that wouldn't have been exposed to those conversations now can be, and it feels a lot more natural. So there's a lot of silver linings, I think. I'm going to ask you to put your futurist hat on now. In terms of the developments, the most influential trends that are going to be impacting our sector in the shorter term, so over the next year, but also looking a little bit more to the future over the next, say, 5 years, what do you think are going to be the biggest splashes?
Well, I think a continuation, at least in the near term, of looking at patient engagement, the value of patient engagement. How do we actually operationalize that and develop processes where we can engage with patients and hear their voice? So I think that that work will continue to move forward in new ways. I also think the data sharing piece has yet to be really resolved. I mean, a lot of journals are asking for data sharing statements, and I think there's a lot of complexity around that. And, you know, starting from the informed consent and with privacy laws, GDPR, the United States is getting in on the action around privacy. I think there's a lot that still needs to be ironed out there. And it'll really be interesting to see what these researchers and investigators do, those who are asking for the data. Are they going to be focusing on reproducibility of the current analysis that was done? Are they going to use that to create and do their own research and come out with new findings? I think that that is a big area and that will continue to grow. And it'll be interesting to see if there's really the bandwidth to do all of that. You know, people are asking for this data, but actually, what are they going to do with it? And what will the learnings be from that? So I think the real world data, patient engagement, and then data sharing are probably some of the, you know, areas that we've been working on, but they'll continue to evolve. And then, you know, thinking a little bit longer term, because 5 years will be here in no time.
Great.
I really think that, you know, the wearable space is really, and that ties into real world data, right? I mean, I think most people have some kind of monitoring device for personal health. Right? It'll be interesting to see how that impacts healthcare decision making and whether or not it does. And so I think keeping an eye on that and just in general around digital medicine is something that we need to be, you know, considering what how we're going to handle that type of data going forward.
Yeah, and there's so much of it, isn't there? Even on my watch, there's so many
right.
people tell me every day, and I'm like, what do I do with all of this information? Yeah,
exactly. I think
what would you, given that there is so much change, what would your advice be to the members of the HCA on how they should prepare for that future that you've described, all of those trends that you're talking about, which are all going to be so important? What would your advice be to the HCA membership?
I have to say, I do a lot of reading and trying to keep up with all of the trends, because there's a lot going on. And I think I definitely do a lot of reading to try to keep up to speed on this. I think listening to the patients' networks that we interact with, what are their needs? How is that space changing? What are they looking for? And then I think also listening to the young professionals that are moving into our space, because a lot of them were born digitally native. What are their needs? What do their peers, how do they want to receive information? And keeping a finger on the pulse of what they are asking for, because I think that that's the only way we'll be able to keep up with the trends of that generation. So.
You're right that the richness of the insights. I think what's coming across to me is that sort of thirst for knowledge, that curiosity that you have innately. I think it's something for people to really learn from and ask questions themselves, and read and soak up information, soak up insights from wherever you can.
I'm so sorry. I do think, a lot of people in our profession, they're scientists by, they were originally scientists and researchers. That's their background. And I think that it's that curiosity that will continue to drive us forward. And I think that that's what's been so great about, the past maybe 5 years in our profession, we've seen a lot of change. And I think it's a large part and due to that.
No, I agree absolutely. So I think that brings the questions to a close. So I wanted to say thank you so much. It's been incredibly insightful. I think some of the themes that have come through, that respect, trust, integrity, and accessibility of science, are clearly a passion. And I think the ideas and the experiences that you shared around the power of great leadership, but also the power of togetherness and community and what can be achieved there, were incredibly powerful. And I'm sure the HCA membership are going to really value and learn a lot from your insights. So thank you so much. Thank you for giving your thoughts today to the briefing room. We very much appreciate it. And thank you so much for your partnership, Catherine.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.